wanted the best, you've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, folks. It's Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the wake-up call of the Iron Lady. That's always mixing, kind of jumps me into the show where I'm just like, wake up, Chris. It's the Iron Lady when she hits those beautiful notes. Anyway, guys, we certainly appreciate you guys coming by. For 16 years, we've been bringing you the most amazing guests, authors, Pulitzer Prize winners, CEOs, billionaires, all the smartest people in the world, and none of them are me. I'm just the idiot with the mic. And we have another amazing author on the show. She is prolific. She's so prolific, I can't even say prolific right. I don't even know what that means. But she's written numerous books, and she's very popular. Let's put it that way. And her newest book is coming out May 21st, 2024. It's called One Perfect Couple by Ruth Ware. She joins us on the show, and she'll be talking to us about her newest, hottest book to fly off the shelves. She has worked as a waitress, a bookseller, a teacher of English as a foreign language, and press officer before settling down as a full-time writer. She now lives with her family in Sussex and on the south coast of England. She's the number one New York Times and Globe and Mail best-selling author of In a Dark, Dark Wood, The Woman in Cabin 10, The Lying Game, The Death of Mrs. Westaway, The Turn of the Key, One by One, The It Girl, and 0 Days. Welcome to the show, Ruth. How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. Hearing that list of books, it did make me think, gosh, I am prolific. That's
I've written
so many books. How did I do that?
You have quite a few books and rave reviews on the Amazon there. So there you go.
Oh, thank you. That's good to know.
I mean, some of your books, I think, are over 50,000 reviews.
They keep ticking off. It's amazing. Yeah, it's just
incredible.
Fantastic that so many people have read it.
I'm still trying to get over 5 on my book. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I mean, a lot of your 30,000 on The It Girl, 51,000 The Cabin in The Woman in Cabin 10, I'm sorry. And quite a few others on the other ones as well in the 5 digits. So congratulations. Give us any .coms. Where do you want people to find you on the interwebs?
I'm on most social media platforms as @RuthWareWriter, same @across all of them. I'm more active on some than others, but you can find me definitely on Facebook and Instagram, Threads, sometimes Twitter. And if you want to find out a bit more about me, I'm on RuthWare.com. Very imaginative.
There you go. So give us a 30,000 overview of what's inside your new book, One Perfect Couple.
So the premise for my new book is my main character, Lila, is a scientist. Her boyfriend, Nico, is an aspiring actor, and he's sort of got to a bit of a crunch in his career. He comes home one day with this amazing make or break proposition. He's been invited to go on this brand new reality TV show. There's just one catch, which is that the premise of the TV show is that it's for couples. So Lila is going to have to be dragged along too. And, you know, she's a bit reluctant, but she agrees to this because she, you know, she wants to be a supportive girlfriend. So they turn up on this gorgeous boutique desert island, you know, tropical seas, white sand, everything's perfect, except maybe it's not. You can still smell the wet paint. The production crew seems to be a bit shonky. And then on the first night, there's a horrific storm. The boat that the crew are all staying on is swept away, and the contestants are more or less left to fend for themselves. And as the tensions rise and the fresh water runs low, Lila realizes that somebody is playing this game to win, and the stakes are life or death.
Ah, life or death. That sounds like the first time, that sounds like my first 5 marriages.
I'm just saying there's quite a lot of relationships in this book, some more toxic than others.
Oh. You know? So is there one perfect couple in the book, or is that a quote-unquote sort of Winkety wink.
A bit of a myth. I mean, I guess I should say you'll have to read it to find out, but the title comes from the title of the reality TV show that Lila and Nico are invited to go on. The idea is that the TV show is the search for one perfect couple, won't necessarily be the same couples that they all turned up in. There might be a bit of jettisoning partners who are a dead weight. But I suppose one of the themes of the book is what really makes a good relationship, like how far are you prepared to go for your other half? So it kind of works on several levels, I hope.
There you go. And the stakes are life or death. You know, I'd watch this show. Can we get this on TV?
One of the Kirkus reviews said, this is my most cinematic novel yet. You know, the big screen, that would be fun.
Make an Amazon thing. I mean, you know, some of the times you watch that Survivor show, you know, you really hate some people and you're like, I wonder if something could befall them. No, that's dark. People don't do that. I'm just teasing.
I mean, that basically is the premise of the book, to be fair. It's kind of like, what if there was this picture-perfect reality TV show and then horrible things happened to all the contestants? So you're maybe not the first person to...
Plus, there's always that couple that, you know, you secretly hate because they almost seem too perfect. Or, you know, they're full of shit because they're always posting, you know,
well, exactly. What's going on behind the scenes of that relationship?
They're always posting stuff on Facebook, putting out this PR, and you're like, I know them in real life. They're at each other's throats at home. There's this, all that, you know, flu stuff they're posting on Facebook. Oh, we love each other. It's our 10th anniversary. Yeah. Meanwhile, they haven't had sex in 11 years.
All of that performative stuff is what you need to worry about. And that's definitely one of the themes of the book.
It's always the thou dost protest too much. They're like the preachers who, you know, call stuff out too much, and then suddenly they catch them in some massage parlor.
Exactly. You're like, you seem awfully concerned about this.
Yeah. Why are you so preoccupied? Concerned about telling the world how great your relationship is, and us single people hate you, and eventually you find out the truth, and you're like, what? I thought they were happy. So there you go. Tell us a little bit about you and your background. How did you grow up? What inspired you to become a writer? How did you know when you finally, you know, you were like, hey, I'm going to do this writing thing and I'm good at it?
Oh, gosh, big question. So I suppose the first thing to say is I have always wanted to be a writer. Like, it's just ever since I was a little girl, I think honestly right back before I really knew what being a writer meant. You know, I was kind of always making up stories, and my poor sister was always getting these kind of, you know, soap opera plots of all of our Barbie dolls. And, you know, I guess I wanted to be a storyteller from a really young age, but it always felt, I don't know, it just felt like something that happened to other people. You know, we were just a really regular working family. My mum was an accountant with the library system. My dad worked in IT. So it just felt like being a writer was something that, you know, other more special kind of somehow different people got to do. And that was a thought that sort of carried on throughout my teens and 20s. And I was like writing stories, and, you know, they started off as kind of little soundbitey things and then just got longer and longer until, you know, eventually I was writing these kind of enormous book length screeds. I didn't really show them to anybody. I think I was really shy. My best friend, I let her read a few, but I just kind of wrote them and then sort of just, you know, filed them under my bed. And it wasn't until I had kids that I realized basically this was kind of it. This was make or break. Like, I had two really small kids. I had a baby and a toddler. And I was about to go back to work at this, you know, pretty demanding job. And I suddenly realized, if I don't find a way to make my writing pay, I'm not going to be able to keep it in my life. You know, I barely have time to wash my hair, let alone write novels. So I need to kind of make this earn its place in my life. And that was what made me kind of get over myself and decide that I was going to put my writing out there, you know, risk rejection, and try to get a literary agent. But yeah, I think if I hadn't had my kids, I'm not sure I would be here today. It's a weird thought.
There you go. I was going to ask you, you know, you write things about murder thrillers, psychological thrillers, suspense thrillers. You seem to have some murder on the mind. Who hurt you as a child, or was your kids just driving you crazy enough you started getting dark thoughts? I'm kidding around.
I feel like we've circled back to the, you know, to the preacher who's preoccupied with, like, why are you so interested in this, Ms. Ware? I don't know. I mean, I think a large part of it is most of my books on some level are about stuff that preoccupies me, stuff that makes me wake up in the night and think, oh, thank God I'm not in that situation, or, you know, what would I do? Or, you know, just stuff that, like, you know, my book, The Woman in Cabin 10, the core of that book is really about a woman who sees something and is not believed. Mm-hmm. And obviously, in the context of my book, it's, you know, it's a big murder. It's, you know, hugely dramatic. She's risking her life and stuff like that. But actually, the core fear of going to the police or going to, you know, authorities with something true that you have seen and them dismissing you because of not what you saw, but who you are. I think that's something that a lot of people worry about. You know, that's a fear that a lot of us have in common. And I think that's maybe why that book struck a chord. You know, murder is a fun way of kind of setting the reader a puzzle and, you know, looking at some bigger themes. But fundamentally, I think I'm actually not that interested in the murders and the murderers in my book. What I'm really interested in is the kind of eternal question of what happens when something extraordinary happens in an ordinary life. You know, I think we've all had one event in our life that just dropped into our existence and kind of just changed us as a person, and how the ripples of that play out. And I think that's really what I'm exploring in my books.
There you go. Your build is the queen of psychological suspense. And this is a build is also hearkening to Agatha Christie's classic. Did you have any inspiration from Agatha Christie novels, or was there any other author that inspired you to write?
In general, I love Agatha Christie. And I think she was one of the first kind of adult crime writers that I read. And I think, you know, reading her books at such a formative age, I was in my teens when I sort of read most of her novels. I think they just really kind of imprinted on me what a perfect crime novel looks like. You know, you want a whodunit, you want a puzzle, you want, if not a traditional detective, because most of my characters aren't, they're just regular people. You want someone who's kind of following that breadcrumb trail of clues. And then at the end of it, what I think Christie does so well, and what I love about her novels, is she reveals the solution and you have that kind of moment of everything clicking into place where you go, oh, of course, I should have guessed it. She gave me all of the clues. You know, I should have figured this out, but I didn't. And that's what I try to do in my books. The problem is crime readers are incredibly good. You know, they read a lot of crime. They're very good at spotting red herrings. You're not going to be able to pull the wool over people's eyes all of the time. But I think One by One is, in some ways, it's a really Christie-ish book, because it's, you know, it's got that super Christie-ish trope of sending a disparate group of characters away to a, you know, an isolated island and then kind of picking them off one by one, which is, you know, what she did in her masterpiece And Then There Were None. But in other ways, I think it's maybe a bit less Christie-ish than some of my books, because it's not a traditional whodunit. You know, from very early on that so the book opens with two characters fighting for their lives, and you know that one of them is going to die. But kind of, it's more of a how do we get to this point than a whodunit. So in that respect, I think it's maybe a bit less Christie-ish than some of my other novels. But definitely, I draw a lot of inspiration from her, and I love her settings and her plots.
There you go. Five couples trapped on a storm-swept island as a killer stalks among them. And yeah, you're right, that scenario, putting you on an isolated island and stuff, gives you that high tension, gives you all that going on where you're just like, or, you know, it is here. I would build a raft and leave.
Well, they may try that. I'm not going to give any spoilers.
I would call someone. Anyway, they probably can't call anybody out.
So this is the thing, because it's a reality TV show, obviously they have all of their, you know, electronic devices taken away. Yeah. That's kind of standard for reality TV.
Right. Yeah.
Because they want the contestants offloading and talking to each other, not, you know, phoning up their mum and saying, so-and-so's been mean to me. You know, they want it all on camera. So that was really convenient from my point of view. I was like, this is perfect. You know, this works for my plot. They do have a radio. But it has, yeah, that's a plot point. So I'm not going to say too much about that. They definitely do try to call for help.
Do you ever have a problem, you know, you mentioned a lot of psychological and suspense readers, you know, they read a lot of these books, you know, and sometimes if you have that relationship with a person in your life, they kind of look at you with one eye open when they sleep because you watch too many CSI shows. Do you find you have trouble with your relationships where people are like, I should keep an eye on you? You write a lot.
Maybe not in terms of, do you mean I'm going to murder them? Or just, you know, yeah. I might put them in a novel.
Yeah. You seem to be really good at it.
Like, yeah, maybe people are going to call in and say, I've never liked the look of her. She's quite suspicious. I hope that my nearest and dearest don't think that I'm going to murder them.
If I was your brother, I'd just be like, keep an eye on her. I'm not turning
back. Keep an eye on that one. I will say, if anything suspicious ever does happen in my life, I'm absolutely sunk because my Google search history is just the most, you know, it's full of 5 ways to dispose of a body. And, you know, is heroin detectable after death? And all these kind of best murder weapons with a syringe, you know. So should something ever happen in the vicinity of me, I will be going down for sure.
You know, that might be a book there. Someone, I don't know if someone's done a book on that, but that might be a book right there. A writer who gets caught up in a murder and they check her internet history and they're like, you did.
Yeah, you definitely did it. There's a kind of pre-Google version of this. Dorothy L. Sayers did a Lord Peter Wimsey novel called Strong Poison, which is about a writer who's researching poisons and then someone she knows is killed by exactly the method that she's just been researching. Wow. And of course she ends up being convicted of the crime. So yeah, let's hope that's not me.
That's why I always clear my browser history, people.
But they all know it. You know, you have to use a VPN and all that. It's all at the central kind of source.
You know a little bit more about what's going on than this.
I did. So I did research some of this for my previous novel, Zero Days, which is a tech novel and is all about, you know, secure communications and how much does Big Brother really know about you? And the answer is an awful lot. You should be careful.
Yeah, I love people who are always like, I don't use my real birthday online. It fools the system. I'm like, no one's fooled, dude.
Does it, though? Does it really fool?
There's huge companies that buy your credit report. They know everything about you. I don't even, you know, I just figure half the world knows my social security number at this point because so many of these companies have been hacked. So I just gave up a long time ago.
You're just all out there. You're like, take my credit card details. Take my identity. It's fine.
I just publish my passwords online. I figure, what the hell?
just that's one way to be, I guess. Just let it all hang out.
I'm like, just log in the account. I'll give you the 2-factor identification password. So some of the characters in the book, do you want to tease out a little bit about them and why you chose them and design them?
I'm really fond of my main character, Lila. She's a scientist, and it's the first time that I've put a scientist into one of my books. Normally, I, you know, kind of go for people who are a bit more. I've had a writer in my books. I've had a journalist. I've had someone who's working for local government. I had a tarot card reader once. That was quite fun to research. But my husband is a scientist. He's a virologist. And for years, he'd been saying to me, oh, you should write a pandemic novel. You know, we're due the next big pandemic because, you know, influenza scientists have been saying this for years. There's always one every 50 years. We had one in 1918. We had one in 1965. And I was like, oh, nobody wants to read about that. And then, of course, COVID happened. And now I'm like, definitely nobody wants to read about that now. The pandemic novel has gone right under the radar. But it did make me think, actually, having a scientist as a main character is quite unusual for the kind of books I write. And, you know, I have sort of quite unique access to him in terms of being able to ask him about his job. And, you know, you pick up a fair bit by osmosis. And I also started to think about the fact that, in a way, scientists are actually quite similar to detectives. You know, they both have that commitment to the truth, really. You know, they're out there asking the difficult questions, gathering evidence, trying to figure out what the evidence is showing them, and facing up to that, whether it's the answers that they want or not. And that's kind of, those are the qualities that I tried to kind of imbue in Lila. You know, I gave her a bit of scientific curiosity, a bit of scientific rigor. And I think all of that makes her quite a good detective in terms of figuring out what's really going on the island and who is actually out to betray their fellow contestants.
Ah, there you go. Does your husband make his own coffee or tea?
Not only does he make his own coffee, he actually has his own coffee beans because we don't like the same type of coffee. So this could all be coming back to your premise about crime writers being inherently untrustworthy.
You want to watch him at night. I bet he's got one eye open. He's seen some of your Google searches over your shoulder. He's
like, absolutely. Oh. The thing about crime writers, though, is we do get it all out onto the page. So I think actually we're very chill people, usually, to live with and to know.
There you go.
So you know, we just, if we've got a gripe, we just write you into our book and kill you there. That's my version. I'm sticking to it.
There you go. We have, in fact, we were talking about this earlier this week with another novelist. We have other novelists on the show. We cheat.
That's okay.
But one of the prolific authors we have on the show, she has about 50 or 60, maybe 70 books at this point. And she comes on about every 6 months. Wonderful gal. And I'm trying to think of her name. She's really mean. If you screw her over in life or piss her off, you'll end up in her books. And you'll probably end up murdered or something.
That's probably a great marketing ploy as well, because all her friends will be reading her books to be like, has she put me in this time? Do I need to check?
I'm always really nice to her when she comes on the show, for obvious reasons.
The solid policy. Yeah, always be nice to crime writers. Yeah, they do terrible things to you.
There you go. And make your own coffee. So there you go. Any final tease-outs for the book that you want to give to people as we go out?
I would just say it's probably... You don't need to enjoy reality TV to have read it. And in fact, I wasn't a big reality TV fan before I wrote it, although I sort of became one in the process of researching it. But I think it's a really fun book to read if you've watched a bit of reality TV. And part of the reason why I decided to write it was I became obsessed with the TV show The Traitors. Have you seen that?
No.
I think it's, so there's US versions, UK versions, and Australian versions. And I've only seen the UK versions, but I have been told that the connoisseur's version is the Australian version, and that's really good. But it's this brilliant reality TV show where you have contestants divided into traitors and faithfuls. And the idea is that the faithfuls are all working together, but the traitors are working against them, and the faithfuls are trying to figure out who the traitors are. It's an amazing show to watch as a crime writer, because it makes you realize how incredibly bad people are at detecting liars and frauds in their midst. So yes, I became obsessed with this, and you might see some fun little kind of nods to some of my favorite reality TV shows in the book.
There's a game that you play, and that sounds like what that TV show is based on. And I think it's called The Wolf or something about the wolf.
Oh, Ultimate Werewolf, maybe.
Is that it?
I don't know if it's the same one that you're thinking of, but I play a game with my kids, which is called One Night Ultimate Werewolf. And it's basically, it's like villagers trying to figure out who is the werewolf and the werewolf lies. And it's really fun. Yeah.
And it's like a little round, you go around the room or something, or you're trying to figure out in the thing. It sounds, I heard about that on TikTok once from some CIA podcast or something. And one of those, military thriller ones. And I was like, holy crap, that sounds like a hell of a game.
It's really fun. It is really fun. It always ends up with you realizing that your family are just abominable liars and would deceive you at the drop of a hat. So it's maybe not something to play if you're feeling a bit fragile. You're like, oh no.
And always make your own coffee and tea. That's my policy. I have two huskies in my house, and I still make my own coffee and tea because I don't trust those little shits.
They're right.
They're huskies. You can't trust them ever. So there you go. Ruth, it's been wonderful and fun to have you on the show. Thank you for coming by. Give us your .com so people can find you on the interwebs.
Oh, it's been such a joy. Come say hello to me at ruthware.com or find me on most social media platforms at ruthwarewriter.
There you go. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Thanks to Ronis for tuning in. Go to goodreads.com, ForChessChrisVoss, LinkedIn.com, ForChessChrisVoss, ChrisVoss1, the TikTok, any of those crazy places on the internet. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other. Stay safe. We'll see you next time. And that should.